From KCRW, I'm Evan Kleiman, and you're listening to Good Food. On the cover of Ileana Maisonette's book, we see her mother's hands up close, balancing a teetering stack of coconut arepas, stuffed with octopus and dripping with sauce. Those hands, with their painted fingernails, gold rings, and silver bangles, tell a story. And even though there are 5.5 million people living in the continental U.S. who count Puerto Rico as their ancestral home, we rarely see their stories in cookbooks and on TV. In her cookbook, Diasporican, Ileana aims to change that. But we can't talk about Puerto Rico without diving into the legacy of past and present colonization of the islands and the impact on the food system. I asked Ileana what the impediments are for the island when it comes to creating their own robust local food system.
I think it's the dependency on imported foods. There are very few people who remember what an agrarian society was, you know, before, especially the generation now who grew up, you know, like in the 80s and the 90s, who are totally used to, you know, like industrialized and convenient food products and things like that. And fast food, which is, there's a ton of fast food all over the island, you know, like literally in the middle of a jungle, there will be like a shopping plaza just built with like a Walmart and a ton of fast food places. And because of the dependency on between 80 and 90% of imported foodstuffs, you have to work with what you're given. And a supermarket is like a big thing now. Walmart is a big thing now there. Costco is a big thing there. So they're literally just kind of like looking to see, you know, what is available. And on top of that, you also have to take in consideration natural disasters, which, you know, before Maria, there was actually, you know, a pretty good renaissance that was happening there with a lot of people doing like small farms and urban farming and chefs that were buying, you know, locally sourced things like that. But as soon as Maria came, they had to start over all over from scratch.
So let's talk a bit about the food. Give us a bit of a history of people who came to the island and what they brought with them.
So from what we've always known, what I've always known, is that the Taíno were the inhabitants of the island of Borinquen, right? Which is why Puerto Ricans are called Boricua. However, now some studies are showing that there might have been another group of people there, but we don't know what they're called. We don't know if it's true, whatever. So I'm just going to go based off the Taíno, which even the name Taíno is also being argued that that's not what the name is. But the Taíno were Arawaks that were all over the Caribbean, but they came from South America. The Taínos grew corn. They had a lot of seafood. That's where the origins of barbecue come from. And then all of a sudden, the Europeans arrived. The Spanish arrived, but also some French, some Dutch. Along with them, they bring pigs. They bring enslaved Africans. With that, they bring rice. And now rice is like a huge part of Puerto Rican culture, but rice would not be huge without the enslaved Africans. There's documentation of some rice, but it never took off because the Taínos didn't know what to do with it because they weren't used to it. It wasn't until the enslaved Africans arrived that it really started booming.
So let's talk about the food and how we build the food as we cook. You have what you call the flavor lexicon of Puerto Rico. There's achiote, alcaparado, pique, sazon, and adobo. Can you talk about each of these items and what they bring to the overall flavor palette of the food?
Puerto Rican cuisine is not spicy, even though we have pique. So pique is just a hot pepper, vinegar-based hot sauce traditionally made with the skins of the pineapple. Not pineapple juice, but just the skins. And then with that pique, you would add that to your food. That can give it spice, but it's not spicy. What Puerto Rican food is, though, is savory. With the addition of the tomato sauce, it becomes, you know, more kind of like a deeper flavor, more floral. With the achiote, which is very kind of like a musky scent. I don't really know another way to describe it. And then with the addition of olives and capers is the acidity, the brininess. So between the tomato sauce, the sofrito that has cilantro, culantro, which is recao, which is kind of hard to find, ají dulces, which are sweet peppers, tomatoes, which is a controversial ingredient, garlic, and onions. All these things, you're building layers. So now you have all the things that make food addictive, really.
Yeah, super umami bomb.
Exactly.
You use sofrito in an unusual way, in a different way than a lot of people. Most people start a dish with it in the pan. You don't always do that.
No.
So how do you use it and why?
I always put it at the end. If I'm cooking for other Puerto Ricans, I will add some in the beginning just to save face. But also, you know, I'm kind of like, I've convinced myself that I'm going to add some in the beginning for my grandma. I'm going to add some at the end for me.
What does it give for you flavor-wise? I would imagine it's just like it gives you a big pop of green and freshness.
Exactly. I mean, it's like pesto. I've never understood the reason why people would put sofrito in the beginning and cook all the flavor out of it. Because it is almost exactly like pesto when you have fresh basil and garlic. You have fresh cilantro, fresh garlic, fresh onions. And if you put it at the end, it really gives you that kind of wallop that you're looking for, you know, where you can actually taste it. By putting it in the beginning, you don't really taste anything. I mean, there might be kind of like a lingering in the background, but because it's such an important ingredient and because it's such fresh ingredient, I'd rather have that forward.
And another really important building block of Puerto Rican food is the sazon, the adobo and the sazon. Can you describe what they each are, how they're different, and how they're used?
Sazon has historically been mostly used as like a coloring agent, right? So the main ingredient is achiote. Achiote is used in, you know, like cheese production to give it that yellow orangey color, but it was also like something that, you know, came directly from the Taínos. They used it for flavor, color. They also used it to paint their faces and a whole host of other applications. So it wasn't always just about food. There are different types of blends, not only in the grocery stores, but every family has their own special blend too. You know, like there are some sazones that has achiote and saffron, achiote with culantro, achiote and tomatoes. There's a different set of blends. The adobo, which is primarily garlic forward, has garlic, cumin, oregano, and black pepper. That too can change depending on family. Some people put different things in it.
I mean, this book of yours is called Diasporican, so a lot of the food is food that sort of morphs as people move around and intersect with larger community and different kind of groceries. Can you talk about the Puerto Rican lap that you included in the book from a time that you lived with the Lau family?
You know, I think that I found out by watching my friend Lottie and her sister Pawnee cook. I noticed a lot of similarities in certain ingredients and certain flavors to Puerto Rican food, specifically the ingredients that go into sofrito. So, you know, a lot of fresh herbs, a lot of cilantro, a lot of basil, a lot of tomatoes, a lot of shallots, which, you know, I just swapped for onions, a lot of garlic, and then, you know, some other things like lemongrass and stuff. But I was like, kind of baffled to see so many ingredients that were similar going into the application that I would think like, I wonder if I can just do a shortcut and just use sofrito, which I already have. And since, you know, we already have ground meat kind of in the Puerto Rican repertoire, instead of using ground beef, I wonder if I can use, you know, ground pork like Lottie and Pawnee do. Because I lived with them for so long and kind of like adapted my taste for super spicy foods and, you know, kind of more like fish sauce and bedeck and stuff like that, I just started using those in my everyday cooking already because I was already kind of accustomed to those type of flavors, which I love, by the way. There is no rhyme or reason. It just kind of like evolved organically based off of what I was eating, based off of what I saw, based off of what I stole, and just used it for myself.
Is there a dish that sort of represents something for you that you would love everyone who gets the book to make? Something that we might normally not have in our repertoire or think about?
It's always a sofrito. I push sofrito so hard because it's easy to make. It's easy to make, it's easy to store, and it can be used in everything. I don't cook Puerto Rican food every day, you know, so it doesn't have to be used in Puerto Rican food. The same with adobo and sazon. These things can be used in whatever you're already making. I put sofrito in curry. I put sofrito in stir fry. I put sofrito in beef stews. I put them in beans. Like, I'm kind of sad that Frank's Red Hot kind of stole, you know, already the term. I put that shit on everything because I already put that shit on everything.
The book is gorgeous, I have to say. And there's so much in there to explore. So thank you for that, Ileana.
Thank you.
That was food writer Ileana Maisonet discussing her first cookbook, Diasporican, which focuses on the cuisine of Puerto Rico around the world. We have a recipe for her Puerto Rican lab on our website. Go to kcrw.com/goodfood. Coming up, if you love Ethiopian food but don't know where to start when it comes to cooking it at home, we have the perfect recipe for you. Stay close.